Welcome to Zoomed Leadership with your host, John Schmidt. This program will take you behind the scenes and deepen your understanding about the patterns and perspectives of leadership today. Now, here's your host, John Schmidt.
Well, hello. Welcome, everyone, again to this week's edition of Zoomed Leadership. I am your host, John Schmidt, and again today, as every week, I'll be taking you out to the big picture, into the up close and personal, and toward a world of desirable futures, those that I always love to say that are rich with the essence of constant renewal. Well, it is wonderful to be back a second consecutive week here after a few missed weeks. We are today continuing after a blustery, breezy, and balmy weekend here in Florida. A turn toward the fall season for sure in this sunshine state of very never-ending warmth and what I always love to say as well, water-centered, kind of an illuminated pleasure. It is just rich here with sun and water and all that great stuff. But great to be with you. Great to be alive, actually, today. And the bay, as I'm looking out here, is now calm after a weekend of very rippling and gushing dynamism. But I got to say, much like the rippling dynamism that I personally felt that Steve Jobs brought to my life, I love the products that he has created and the deeper pleasure he has brought to my own personal and business endeavors. And I will start off by saying I do feel the sadness in his passing, as I suspect many of you do as well. I feel like not only did we lose a good man, but a real spark of innovation in how he brought a deeper essence of a true nature into form, our true nature, the essence of grace, the essence of artfulness, the essence of sort of a limitless creative potential. And I'm going to miss that. I'm going to miss that wonderful reach in creative yet practical thought that Stephen Jobs helped mirror to us all. But perhaps in his passing, we can focus even more intently on bringing our own creative and innovative passions to bear. In that vein of thought, and practical thought at that, I'd like to continue this week with part three of Inspiration Ignited 3 weeks ago by István Bányai, that of taking frames of a continually larger view, continuously contextualizing our view of reality with another zoom out to a bigger picture or a wider frame, a bigger frame on the balcony of life, to continually reference both the practicalities of the moment with the bigger, more wide, more deep holding that is at play. Today I'd like to begin, though, by taking a couple of frames back in closer. I'd like to do that first. I'd like to go back to 2 weeks ago and begin with some perspectives, some tangible, practical ones at that, regarding specific anticipations in this crisis period that we're in, the fourth turning, as we've been calling it, that we're in. I'd like to bring some value to you in synthesizing some perspectives about perhaps the best case of our anticipations of the financial crisis and some views toward more challenging aspects of the crisis to come and anticipations that we would be best to keep on our radar screen personally and collectively. So I want to summarize perhaps the best case anticipations we might see. I want to do that relative to the stock market today and regarding the context for our personal and our financial preparations for this end game that I think that we're in, and the more dim as well and rather dark views that might be portrayed as an offset to this best case. Of course, this best case, I think, as I'll begin to tell you in the middle or in the beginning here, it is still a solid decline coming at the best of cases that we're living into. But we'll get to that. And then with the practical view as a buildup, I'd like to widen the frame once again to another perspective of the post-crisis growth period. Specifically, I'd like to point to some thoughts on the fourth turning from an interior viewpoint, that is, in an orientation to transformations of consciousness that I started to point to last week that might be central to our evolving forward and the evolving expansion of the human condition here on the planet. That's part of where we were talking about last week as well, but I'll pick up on that. So as usual, zooming out, zooming in, what I so love to do is an interplay between this totality of life and the very presence that's flowing uniquely within each one of us. I'll be solo again today. I'm going to be backdrop again by contributions I have found in the last week very significant, and I think significant enough to pass along to you, significant enough to point out as clear representations of this overall field of view that we have been exploring on Zoomed for some time, and in particular for the last few weeks. And again today, references from a mixture of sources. Tony Caldero, on one hand, his exceptionally astute recognition of larger patterns and dynamics of the marketplace, that he's underpinned, of course, by his great leap in what he brings to the table, an objective Elliott Wave analysis, a great peer and bridge to our understanding of our coming futures. Also reflections today that I'm going to incorporate, and I'm going to recommend to you a video to take a look at, David Stockman, former director of the Office of Management and Budget. In the Reagan years, he's also been an entrepreneur, advisor, public official, supreme in a financial sense. I think he offers a stellar view and certainly wisdom beyond his years that we should pay attention to. Also, a mirror today again of Strauss and Howe, the Fourth Turning folks, compilations that we brought forward a couple of sessions ago in a building, and then many, many more sources that I always synthesize into a picture of reality, one that I'm suggesting that you and I and all of us should be very aware of. So let me suggest this simple analogy today, maybe a direct one, a simple one just to get us started, but to consider the camera that you own. And consider that that this zoom out perspective, consider it in light of the lens that you have as well. I'm a Nikon guy, got a number of camera lenses. As you might expect, I've got a zoom lens or multiple of those that come in close, get back further away. But today I want to begin with our lens and even your 3x zoom that might be in your portable pocket, in your pocket with a portable camera. Suggest where and when today I'd like to zoom in, like to suggest where we zoom out and how we're going to flow that a little differently than just Isfahan's going back up to the balcony. But let me begin by zooming back in a couple of frames inward, couple of frames in a reverse progression than Isfahan has done, and go back and bring forward the human cycles of change and development, the pattern, and the multi-cycle view that Strauss and Howe profiled in their book, The Fourth Turning. Recall how 2 weeks ago we talked about and reviewed how modern history, the past five centuries, have showcased in our Anglo-American society a pattern of change and evolution into eras. New turnings, roughly eras that occur every two decades, which overall come together in cycles of four turnings. And that's what we presented and started talking about. Each of these overall cycles spans about 80 to 100 years. Each cycle includes four specific turnings, perhaps much like I opened the show as I was talking about what here in Florida is the season moving into the fall. Perhaps these turnings we might think of as history's specific seasonal rhythms as well. But these are rhythms of growth, rhythms of maturation, rhythms of entropy, and rhythms of destruction. They come in the form of these fours. That's what we started to introduce. And we use Strauss and Howe's language, if you recall, 2 weeks ago for the turnings. And remember, the first one was about a turning to a high. It was about a growth. It was about expansion. The second was about an awakening and a protest underpinned, as you recall, by a maturation of society. The third, about an unraveling. And the fourth, the period of crisis, the decisive era of upheaval, which involves the propelling replacement of the old system and civic order with a new one. And as I have said, and we pointed to 2 weeks ago and then last week, as I've pointed out very clearly, in this period of crisis, this turning is where we are now. We term it crisis, which is actually where we began at the turn of this century, and it will last roughly to the end of this decade, plus or minus some number of years, 2020, but maybe even earlier than that. And for those of you that hadn't really gotten this picture, go back to our September 12th show. We started to paint a bigger picture there. But Strauss and Howe, recall, provide a further contextual review this larger fourth turning and even larger prophecy about it. I think it's a worthy viewpoint. I'd like to get to that today. But I'd like to take the lens in the turning. I'd like to really put in, a look regarding the financial dynamics and the marketplace first, especially because of the prominence of the financial crisis that we're in. And then I'd like to come back out a few frames to the fourth turning, to the larger picture of Strassenhau, and then give you some generalization about that. So I'd like to dive in a little bit first. But recall 2 weeks ago that we overlaid on these four turnings representations of secular cycles or trends, bear markets and bull markets, the financial side of things. We started to introduce that. And recall that we talked about a secular trend is a long-term trend, consists of a number of these supporting trends. And a secular bear market actually consists of a number of other pieces, but a bear market consists of larger bear markets and smaller bull markets, and just the opposite for secular bull markets, larger bull markets, smaller bear markets, the subsets of them. Well, I'm not trying to confuse you with all this. I think we don't want to get too far, maybe a bit too much, but suffice it to say, secular here means a longer-term trend. And if the language is not familiar to you, a bull market's one associated with kind of this growth, this confidence, anticipation of things going up, and a bear, the reverse, a decline in the market, a shift from optimism, turning to fear and pessimism and anticipation of losses. And the question is, where are we now? Well, we've been in a secular bear market since the crisis began. The fourth turning began, as we call it, the secular turning early in the decade, and the century. And actually, the secular cycles overlay these turnings as well. We see a bull secular cycle for the first and the third turning, and a bear secular cycle in the second and the fourth. So now we are in a bear secular cycle, and we have just, as we did back in the 60s and 90s, we have moved through, just as we did then, we are in the midst of this protest or awakening period. We can contrast that period to this period as a similar bear secular cycle. So you're probably asking yourself now, why am I going through this? Why is this important to me? Why is this language, which I'm throwing out that you may not be familiar, why is its relationship maybe practical in our thinking? Well, for this reason. Because I think it's important to look at the background patterns beyond those that we see and listen to on our daily television pundits, the CNBC and the likes. The micro attention's there, and we need to get to the balcony for our planning and our preparations for the next phases of the cycle. And what I want to do next is give you a sense of where are we in this cycle, what's coming next in the cycle, how can we anticipate, how can we sense and see the best case, and what is the worst case, and how do we prepare for it. That's where we're going next. Hear the music in my ears, folks. Take a break. Come back in a couple of moments. We'll continue with this progression today. Thanks. Great to be with you.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network. The Zoomed Leadership Conversation today, as well as shows both past and upcoming, are intended to illuminate perspectives on the great transition in motion, the extraordinary era of change that is affecting all of our personal lives, our organizations, our communities, and our governing institutions. Big shifts are happening, and more are coming. Some can be foreseen, but many are outside current paradigms of thought. All, however, ultimately will be shaped by new and expanding forms of leadership, capable of holding the widest possible views and the deepest forms of interconnection. Join Zoomed host John Schmidt weekly as he rides the rising wave of intelligence, moving us all toward a world of immense potential, dynamism, and economic, social, and environmental renewal. Zoomed is sponsored in part by Avastone Consulting, a source point for development of leadership and organizational resilience and sustainability for the last 25 years. Find John and his colleagues at Avastone via avastoneconsulting.com.
It's all Arizona, all over the world. If you're a local Arizona high school sports fan, or if you're a transplanted fan somewhere else in the world, have we got a show for you. The first internet sports radio talk show focusing solely on high school sports is The Coach's Corner with Scott Lovely. Tune in to talk about your favorite teams, players, or coaches. It's 100% Arizona high school sports coverage and a little bit more. Tune in Mondays at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern, to the Voice America Sports Channel.
There's a course offered on Seventh Wave Network that you never saw offered in college. One that provides information on how to transform ancient wisdom teachings into everyday life. You'll learn how to create from your spirit and explore the world with all of your senses. Participation is encouraged. Enroll in Spirituality 101, the course you can't afford to miss, with your host, Reverend Norma. Classes in session every Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, 12 noon Pacific Time, in your favorite classroom, Seventh Wave Network.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Zoom Leadership with your host, John Schmidt. For more information about John and our program, visit avastoneconsulting.com. That's A-V-A-S-T-O-N-E consulting.com. Now, back to Zoom Leadership.
Okay, back on Zoom today. We are continuing. This is Zoom number 3, in many respects, the Istvan Banyai perspective. We are going back to the fourth turning. We're going to take a further look, a further cut. In particular, I'd like to build a sense of the best case, a more realistic case. I'm going to slow this down a little bit. I had a little bit too much on that first segment, went a little too fast, so let me see if I can't put this in perspective for us today. Because I really started, I wanted to come back and pick up that we're in the fourth turning, and this fourth turning is a secular bear cycle. It's a challenging period. But here is what's important to realize about this, because I think Tony Caldero so adeptly pointed out last weekend about this secular bear trend, that the one that we're in amidst this crisis turning, and that it has three stages to it. And we can see this very distinctly when you compare, as Tony points us to, and as I was suggesting a minute ago, comparing our current secular bear cycle to the last one in 67 to, say, 82. Because if we look at the last secular cycle, which was inflationary in nature, and we look at it sort of via a graph of the consumer price index, because of the inflationary nature, over that period, it looks this way. It starts from the left and shows itself as a consecutive series of three mountains. A small mountain on the left, connected to a middle-sized mountain in the center, and connected to a larger mountain on the far right. In other words, you're seeing three mountains growing in size, or three periods of distinctly increasing levels of inflation. These three peaks, I guess really, if you will, these three peaks of the cycle are bringing trauma with them and pain with each one, and more as you go to the right or as they get bigger. So our charts for the crisis, the one that we're in now, the secular bear cycle that we're in now in this fourth turning, because it's actually deflationary and not inflationary, they do rotate, it looks just the opposite. It looks like three upside-down mountains, or actually ravines, with a smaller ravine at the left connected to a mid-sized ravine in the middle, and a deeper ravine or canyon on the right. But actually, with respect to where we are, the smaller and middle ravines are the ones that we've already experienced, and the deeper canyon to the right is the one that we can anticipate and we can project is coming, and it's coming to our future horizon. In other words, folks, this projects a deflationary low deeper than the one that we had in that 2007 to 2009 period and suggests that it will likely coincide with a collapse in commodity prices, particularly gold, at the conclusion of gold's cycle after it has a continuing run-up. Now, are you getting this? Because this is important. There is more down to come, and there's more downside on the way. But the interesting thing is, if you take this pattern and you look at the extreme lows of it, and actually you look at it from a stock market perspective, it's slightly a variation of this pattern. Because the pattern, if we look at it at that point, and we look at the last historical perspective and before, what you actually see is in the stock market's perspective is the second ravine, the one we had in 2009, was likely to be the low, and it's not as deep as the ravine to come. So we have deflationary pressures for a new low, but based on this context, based on the view, based on this pattern, we might say the stock market is not going to go as low before, but it's going down. Now, Tony's got a lot of other analysis, and I think some rich analysis about the nature of what's going on in risk and counterparty risk. I think that's way too much for our show today, but I think the big news I want to point to from the patterns that we've observed and considered, that the best case scenario, and I'm going to repeat that, the best case scenario, the one I'm describing that Tony points to with this comparative data, is a moderate bear market fall, one that we're living into, with an anticipated decline in stock index prices, like the Standard & Poor's Index, declining down to the mid-800s to maybe the 1,000 1,000 point range with a likely target in the 900s. Friday we closed at 1155. So what that means is another possibly 15 to 25% fall from where we are now, 20% most likely, all on top of the decline since May of this year, say a roughly 16% plus that we've already experienced. So what I'm trying to do is get your attention. I'm trying to get your attention regarding where we are and where you are in your thinking, investment-wise, job-wise, protection of your assets-wise, storm supplies-wise, support that you have relative to trusted friends and colleagues. I'm asking the question, have you thought about where we are and what's coming? Three stages, three phases within this secular bear cycle. We've only gone through two of them. We have a big one to come. And again, patterns are really important to consider because they give us some baseline reflection. They give us some reflection of the historical context of the past and the turnings and the experience in the markets. But again, this is the best case. And folks, that's just remember that. Best case, 20% from here. Where are your investments? Where is your capital? Are your preparations sound? And it includes, of course, the prospect that if we look at the pattern of the downtrend so far, that we're likely to see some ups and downs, some waves up in the market movement, but that what we can anticipate with these ups, that they're followed over time by an undulating pattern, lower lows, smaller rebounds up until we end the crisis. So actually, Tony is pointing to the best case of ending this bear cycle. He's actually pointing it to it in terms of the possibility of ending it even next year. Well, best case, maybe. That all makes real sense to me. I think it's supported by the data. But I got to ask the question, and this is where I'm pushing back on this to you, is what about the great debt super cycle that we've been talking about? Will we be out of the woods by next year in this base case? And I suggest likely not. And I think it's supported by perspectives that I saw in the good words and the summary by David Stockman that was put together, and I reviewed it over the weekend. I think it's one that I suggest to you as well. And it's from his composite view, which I think is a clear offset to this best case. And I'm going to ask us to consider it. I'm going to ask us now to step back out a bit with our camera, consider this summary of what a few points that David makes that I think are relevant for us to put on our radar, on our sights for the remaining wave and stage and actual phase of where we are in this secular down cycle in this fourth turning. It's a great interview, by the way. Chris Martinson did it. He did it on his website, chrismartinson.com. It's actually not a video. It's an audio. Look on the left side of that blog at chrismartinson.com. It is entitled David Stockman, Blame the Fed. It's one of the best summaries that I think you'll listen to. But here's a gist of his comments because I want to highlight them. Much more is what he goes into. But the best case, I think, is unlikely. The great debt supercycle we're in has a portion only of what we've seen so far. There is much more to go down to a low, low. I think Tony's view is right on. He's proven for 20 years he's really adept at this. But, folks, this debt supercycle, coupled with the crisis and the turning we're talking about, and even the bigger Zoom view we talked about last week, to me suggests the pain here and what's coming will likely be greater than smaller. And here's why. Here's why, in a summary fashion of a few points and a few comments. These are, for I think for many of you, are going to be familiar and a reminder, but I think we need to keep them on our radar screen. Because we've been amidst a 30-year debt spree, unparalleled in modern history, where we've gone from this debt ratio of 1.6, meaning the amount of debt that we have to our gross domestic product, public and private, 1.6, including a $22 trillion of debt. We've gone from that now to 3.6 times GDP with a $52 trillion of debt. Sounds like our Malden conversation for sure, but the original ratio, that 1.6, was like a gold norm. It underpinned 100 years of success, but we are now $30 trillion under the load of this lead on our collective burden, on our lives, of our children's lives, where now $6 of debt is created for every dollar of GDP. And folks, this is grossly unsustainable, as we've talked about before. We've talked about it before that we've been treading water since 2007 and 2009 with some private reduction of debt. But for the most part, we've shifted private debt to public debt, ever-growing amounts of it at that. And that's why we're globally seeing now sovereign debt crises, countries having too much debt. Portugal, Ireland, Italy, Greece, and Spain. The European crisis that we talked to, a prelude to our own here in the U.S. debt, which can't easily be repaid without tremendous austerity and pain. It's what's underneath this evolution of debt. There are several things, and that's what I'd like to point to. I'd like to provide a clear picture of the backdrop and what's underneath it, but I hear the music in my ears. Let's take a break. Let's come back. Let me paint that picture, paint the picture of where the best case might actually be pushed against, and then come back and really build on that from there. Take a break, folks. Come back in a moment. Thanks.
Stocks, bonds, investment opportunities, financial news, and talk. We can help. Call us now toll-free, 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
Zoomed Leadership is sponsored in part by Cosmos Journal, the journal for world citizens creating the new civilization. More than just a publication, Cosmos is committed to informing, inspiring, and engaging the world in the transition to an emerging, sustainable, just, and compassionate global culture and civilization that works for all. For over 10 years, Cosmos has been a leading voice that tracks the deep systemic transformations already occurring at the margins of society as our institutions prove unable to serve the needs of the times. Published twice a year in print and digital, Cosmos includes leading-edge articles from social change leaders on the global commons, people power, global governance, new economics, collective intelligence, and cultivating the self. The impact of these paradigm-changing ideas is enhanced through stunning visuals and photographic stories that motivate to action.
Start exploring Cosmos Journal and continue opening your perspectives about leadership and the emerging great transition at cosmosjournal.org. Join the Cosmos Leaders of Change and make a difference today.
These days, everyone is looking for information on staying young, healthy, and fit. The Voice America Health and Wellness Network is here to help you on your quest to better health and a better you. We talk about everything from diet, fitness, and aging to substance abuse, personal growth, mental health, and much more. Learn from our experts who cover health and wellness from traditional and holistic perspectives. Tune in to the Voice America Health and Wellness Network. Healthy living starts here.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Zoom Leadership with your host, John Schmidt. For more information about John and our program, visit avastoneconsulting.com. That's A-V-A-S-T-O-N-E consulting.com. Now, back to Zoomed Leadership.
Okay, back on Zoom, the fourth turning, a further look today. Zoom number three in many respects, and what I'm trying to do is paint a picture on our radar screen of the best case, which I've just given you, the best case of this secular bear market, that it comes to a conclusion next year with a low, but not as low in the market as we've seen, but I think there's a larger picture, there's a larger frame as we've stepped out and begun to take a look at that's summarized by David Stockman. And I think there's a key element that we're underpinning. David Stockman points to it, we've talked about here on Zoomed, and a key element we keep misdiagnosing the nature of the problem of what is really going on, the central issue of leadership. We keep thinking, folks, that this is a growth problem alone, and all we need to do is stimulate the economy, jumpstart everything via Keynesian economic logic. We've talked about that logic before and this multiplier effect that's assumed, and the fact that at Stanford and other places they've actually proved in studies that that's not the case. You don't get a multiple of growth for every dollar you spend. It is a fraction of a gain of what they think it is. Instead, what you get really is borrowing from the future on our U.S. credit account as a handout now, but instead of gains, it gets you back where you started and worse down the road. All this pumped up spending, which includes the Obama recent proposals that we're seeing, ignore the balance sheet problem that we have been talking about, that we are in fact at the edge, this credit edge, or at least on the way to that edge of the credit being used up here and worldwide, and stimulus simply buries us deeper into it. And of course, and I think David does a good job of pointing to this, this debt mirage, the obscuration of the real problem, this overburdened debt overhung balance sheet, is the Federal Reserve and its contribution to it, creating false manipulations of the market and rates, keeping rates low, promoting the speculation that contributes to the mess in the first place. And that's not to mention the money printing, the quantitative easing, and what goes on with that. We've talked about that clearly before as well. But the Federal Reserve, as David describes it so well and I point you to, is the great enabler, more Keynesian than perhaps Keynes himself. Keynes said you simply need to manage the economy through bear cycles by adding stimulus and altering monetary policy, which, as we've seen now, has gotten grossly out of control, hadn't we? In effect, folks, the Federal Reserve, through its policies, has sent the signal to Congress that you can spend and borrow money freely, well, virtually free, without any incentives or any signals to the contrary. They really call for real leadership and attention to fiscal deficits and the debt at large. In the process, the Fed has allowed this continual kicking the can down the road, undermining the real role of government, the open, sunshine-oriented fiscal management, and the accountability that we so need. In essence, in relation, I think, to what Simon Johnson really described in The Quiet Coup, Wall Street, with this allegiance of the Fed, has enabled the banking system to be safe through the distortion of rates, through the suppression of rates to savers like you and me, the way they've gained $300 or $400 billion in that process and redistributed it to banks under the guise and the name of recapitalizing them. 12 people, folks, at the Fed, and David DeStockman points to this so well. I encourage you to really get a clear sense of it. 12 people at the Fed are effectively doing central planning of the U.S. economy and authorizing this transfer of funds, which is really, when all said and done, likely grounds for a true constitutional crisis. In other words, we've helped, most recently through what we experienced in the early 2000s, we've recapitalized banks for their bad decisions and taken all the debt on as the public and the citizen and the balance sheet, and this crisis we've actually borne. Again, to be clear, from a leadership perspective, we've created an unsustainable, reckless economic boom and a mess with it, and we've supported it by a reckless Keynesian management, taken away the incentives and the signals, we've taken away the means of the government to management, and we've misdiagnosed the very cause of the central nature of the problem. And so, implicit in this whole process is the theory that what we've really experienced is, well, maybe it's a blip, maybe it's bad luck, maybe it's a 100-year flood, but it's not that we're fundamentally on the wrong track and pouring gas on the fire. In other words, given our Zoomed conversation, we have a dominant worldview that is erroneous in its understanding of reality that, in effect, is manipulating and is distorting the capital markets, the principal markets of the world, and moving us toward, as we have talked about many times, and the offset to this best case, an unavoidable bust at worst or a huge period of austerity at best. And underpinned by all of this, the system is politically out of control. It's ever increasing this debt burden, and I think that it suggests, and this is a point that David makes that I really agree with, and I point to you as well as we get into this election period, we actually, folks, have two parties that we might consider as free lunch parties. Different in view, underpinning the same in terms of a free lunch. On the one hand, we've got the Democrats, who are entitlement and welfare-oriented and adhering to spending levels that can't be maintained with the revenues that we have and project. It's a welfare state in its orientation. But the Republicans, on the other hand, cut taxes and continually, even today, focus on cutting taxes randomly without offsetting any spending reductions, and we're adhering to ongoing growth in military expenditures. Even the recent budget that's been put forward, one of the committees has a growth of another 3%. It is a military warfare state, both of them with offsetting pieces contributing to this free lunch. And then when we get underpinning it, underneath it, relative to the polarities, relative to the no compromises, to the no budging, to the no change, the other position is wrong. It's the setup, folks, for fiscal policy we normally see in banana republics. So we've had reckless, irresponsible, free lunch parties, and all of this is coming to the end of the road as the end of the debt supercycle really comes into the end game that we've been talking about. We're entering that dangerous phase of the end game where there aren't enough private savers, aren't enough private savings to absorb the debt of all the sovereigns and all the massive debt that's created or taken on by the world's central banks. And as we talked about and had Rogoff suggest to us, we can't print our way to prosperity, as he has so well reflected. But this, folks, as Rogoff has described and James Rickards pointed out to us as well, this appears to be our policy. So what's coming? Well, obviously, need for massive debt deflation. deflation. We have to reduce our debt. And what's going to happen in the process? More big unemployment, more economic and financial crises, no growth at all, great period of austerity, and the two parties are likely incapable in their polarities in seeing this or addressing the problem from the fundamental worldviews. We have a system, folks, as a whole, with the polarities underneath, that's falling into full and absolute paralysis. And the Keynesian view never really seems to have thought about what happens at the end of this balance sheet limit. What happens at the end of this balance sheet game? And that, coupled with the imperfections of our democracy and these worldviews and the rigidified position, points to big breakdowns, big shocks coming our way. So as you're sitting there and you're listening to my diatribe and my summary, and you're probably saying, well, can I believe this? That's one. And two, you're saying, what do I do? And I'm suggesting that the best case actually seems a far cry from the reality represented by the core threads of what Stockman's pointing to. And really what I'm trying to do is get you to reflect on that. It's to really start to think about this if you haven't. Not to gloss over it, but to really get this prospect in your belly. And then once you've done that, consider what to do. And what I suggest, one key piece of that, is to begin to focus, if you haven't already, on conserving and protecting your capital. That is one element of other elements of preparation that we've pointed to, that Chris Martinson pointed to, that others have pointed to, but recognizing the risk inherent in what's coming to stocks, to commodities, particularly like copper, gold being the offset to that, the bond market, what appears to be in a bubble, the derivatives of the stock market in general, but recognize the risks inherent in that and what you need to do to prepare for it and to consider that gold as a de facto currency, should that be in your sights? Well, Jim Cramer on CNBC, from the conventional view, even says absolutely yes. So, while on this best case, this real case review going back and forth, let me ask you to zoom out just a bit wider. Zoom out even just a little bit higher. I want you to zoom the camera out, maybe another click or two, and I want to go back and I want to consider Strauss and Howe with this buildup, with this perspective, as they describe their anticipations, and I'd like to get to the notion of why even in their words they don't see the best case. Because what they've done is looked at fourth turnings over time, and they've also then suggested, given the realities of what we know now about where we are and about the expectations, they put together a picture of the reality we're coming into. And folks, I don't want to get into it now. I hear the music is coming shortly to us. Let's take a break. Let's come back in a few minutes. I'd like to point you to where they are in their words, Strauss and Howe, and how that dovetails best case, real case, the case you want to consider, and how that flows into our future. Take a break, folks. Come back. Zoomed. Final segment in a moment. Thanks.
Up-to-date business and financial news. Call now and get the financial information you need. 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790.
The experts are here.
Voice America Business Network.
Tune in every Tuesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time for The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. On the show, Aldana and some of today's top business professionals will discuss some of today's most pressing business issues that hold you, the business owner, back. Aldana will also give you 21 ways to grow with her list of growth strategies. Grow smart, grow profit, and grow your business with Aldana Ambler and The Growth Strategist every Tuesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on The Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
Think of the world 50 years ago. Now think of this same world and how it'll be 50 years from now.
Did you know that if the world's population continues to grow at its current rate, our children and grandchildren will only have 25% of the resources per capita that our parents and grandparents had? We must preserve the foundation of a quality standard of living. That foundation starts with Go Green Radio. Join your host, Jill Buck, for Go Green Radio every Friday at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Voice America.
How can we Americans realize our dreams to earn a living? How can you pursue your dream and make money as an owner or an employee? Learn how at The American Business Person, the online weekly radio talk show hosted by Rich Killian. Today's business leaders share how to succeed and what fails. If you own a new or established business or ever hope to, you must tune in. Join us every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, 2 p.m. Central, and noon Pacific on the Voice America Business Channel. Or listen on demand to our archived shows.
Voice America Business Network. The bottom line in business.
You're listening to Zoomed Leadership with your host, John Schmidt. For more information about John and our program, visit avastoneconsulting.com. That's A-V-A-S-T-O-N-E consulting.com. Now, back to Zoomed Leadership.
Okay, last segment today, I'm talking about the fourth turning, the best case, perhaps the real case, the best case being that we've got another 20 to 25% decline. That's the best case. The real case is the one I'm really painting, and that is the one we've been talking about for some time now. David Stockman bringing it to life, my summary comments on that. And then now the words. I think the synthesis words of why the best case is not likely the one we're actually living to into in this fourth turning. And Strauss and Howe have some interesting perspectives on that. At some point, what they suggest is America's short-term crisis psychology is going to catch up to the long-term post-unraveling fundamentals, the actual third turning, and this might result in a great devaluation, as they call it, a severe drop in the market price of most financial and real assets. This devaluation could be short, but laden with horrific panic or free-falling price and prices in a market with no buyers. Or it could be a series of downward ratchets linked to political events that sequentially knock the supports out from under the residual popular trust in the system that we already, folks, recognized is shaken. And as assets devalue, trust will further disintegrate, which will cause assets to devalue further, and so on and so on. Every slide in asset prices, slide in employment, slide in the production will give every generation, every 20-year generation that they really refer to and that's part of this, give them cause to grow more alarmed. And before long, America's old civic order that they talk about, which is what is unraveling now in this crisis, it will seem rocked and ruined beyond repair. People will feel like a magnet has passed over society's hard drive, blanking out the social contract, wiping out old deals, clearing the books of vast unpayable promises to which people had once felt entitled. In their words, the economy could reach a trough that may look to be the start of a depression. With American weakness then exposed, foreign dangers could erupt as well. This piece, this perspective, let that sink in, folks. Let that sink in terms of the real prospect of that. That's pain, folks. That's the kind of thing that I'm anticipating that at least we need to have on our radar screen relative to this fourth turning. Could it be the best case? I think perhaps. Is it likely? I think we're describing a system and a 30-year process of runaway debt in an unsustainable way that has to have an offset, and that brings pain, folks. So, most importantly, though, let's not lose sight of what I think Strauss and Howe bring to the table, and we've been suggesting as well. Most importantly, from this trough and from these dangers, the makings of a new social contract and new civil order, civic order will arise. That's in their words, early makings of the positive path forward in a new expansionary phase of life on the planet. Emerging in this crisis climax will be the great entropy reversal that includes the miracle of human history in which trust is reborn. In other words, down but not out, down as a great opening to an evolutionary perspective. That's the picture that we were describing last week as well. Powerful words, folks, and I suggest wonderful fodder for our consideration about how to live into the coming crescendo of this fourth turning and the end of the great debt supercycle. I'm actually more of an optimist than anything, but I'm also a realist, and thus I'm hopeful that you might fully consider this situation as it is. That's why I like to continually put it on our radar screen and not soothe yourself with what I always consider to be the salve of the system in trauma here that wants to either keep us asleep at best or engage in a mass transfer of wealth away from us all at worst. But really, I've said many, many times before, only you can sense into what the truth of this reality is. Only you can do that with you being present to the facts as you know them, getting in your own belly and saying, what is real and true for me? So we're also seeing right now reports of what's coming out of Europe. Good news that in the next 3 weeks, they're going to, quote, have an end to the problem, or at least this phase of the problem. They're going to recapitalize the banks. Temporarily, folks, we're likely to see different positive movements. But don't be deterred. These moves take us away from the consideration of the larger view, the possibility of the problem yet to be solved, the problem that's not yet really even diagnosed. So, consider it all seriously, folks, and if you haven't made preparations, do so. But I want to end today with a simple zoom out, and maybe beyond the words that even Strauss and Howe about the crisis crescendo will, quote, serve as a giant reversal, a great entropy reversal in which the miracle of human history is reborn. I think that's the point. That is the nature of the positive view, and that, for me, opens the door to a further view of the fourth turning, especially the turning of the wheel from the interior perspective that we often like to do, the turning of the wheel in our own, as we said last week, evolution of consciousness. That will, as we discussed last week, I think pervade us all, just as in that Bose experience, but this turning, perhaps more than any other, and I think it's reflected as a combination that we talked about last week of these inner and outer shifts, it points to the rich, to the fulfilling transformations of consciousness, a movement supported by new capacities, but the evolution of this movement, I think, actually moves us along a progression from what we've known to what we're becoming and can become. And that is the movement from individual realization, followed by where we evolve to a boundless realization of our true nature, succeeded by living our boundless realization then as a freedom vehicle, as I've described, where we're the hand of life, to, I think, the fourth turning, where we begin to recognize that there is the experience of boundlessness, but even more than that, we come to recognize more fully how boundlessness actually appears, that each one of us in every moment is really life and reality experiencing itself, and that whatever we are experiencing is it. There's no end point, it. There's no beginning, there's no end. There's rather and simply living the true nature that's flowing through us, recognizing that we are this mystery with no end. And our pathway is to know our true nature, to live it, to become its fulfillment, and to live this reality as it becomes the very fulfillment of our lives. And folks, as we end today, I point to that because I think the fourth turning, and in the context of that, and what it brings with us individually, the realization of our presence in this free hand in every moment is just the innovation, the creativity, the emergence of what is needed to support this transition, to support this movement into the new world, just as Stephen Jobs brought that to us in his own expression, his own living presence, and consumer electronics and what he brought to changing our own lives. That, folks, is the great optimism that we might hold. That is the wonder and mystery of our amazing future. Feel it, live it, open ourselves to this, the realities of this presence. I think it's all here during this period of time, inward, outward, the intersection. And that's the thought I want to leave you with today, the optimism and the wonder of the mystery that's yet unfolding within us as this new world, new human comes to life. Have a great week, folks. Pleasure it always to be with you. And we'll continue with this wider frame. Keep getting wider as we continue into our next show. But most of all, until next week, enjoy, folks. Out here, thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Thank you again for listening to Zoomed Leadership with host John Schmidt. Please be sure to join us again next Monday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. And have a terrific week.